All right. Hello. Welcome to the April 28th, 2020 Sync meeting. I am your host, Theo Butler. With me here is Ryan and Joe. Say hello.
Hi, I'm Joe.
I'm Ryan.
All right, great. So Matthias will probably be joining us in about 30 minutes. So I think we should leave off the discussion of RFCs until he comes back. So let's just check quickly if there are any pull requests on PonyC right now. I know that there's been some activity based on fixing FreeBSD builds that have recently been made available. Looks like there's a current PR number 3526 for fixing FreeBSD build instructions. It looks like it's just a change in the one of the build direction files, the build.md, for switching make to gmake, which from my experience with FreeBSD makes perfect sense. I think this looks good to me. So I'm just gonna approve that now.
Sounds good.
And squash and merge. All right, that was easy enough. Let's see if there's anything else that's new on the pull request space. Oh, I don't recall seeing this. Apparently, Dipin has opened a PR for RISC-V support. That's exciting. This is pull request 3435. Okay. At a brief glance, it doesn't look like it's ready just because there seems to be issues with unwinding, which, I can imagine that being a bit tricky. I don't know the details of unwinding, or at least I should say I haven't had to know the details of unwinding for a few years now. I just remember it being not so fun. But I'm definitely excited to see a RISC-V support for the Pony compiler. That seems really awesome. Yeah, I don't think I have anything to add on this at this time. And I believe that's all that's happened recently on PonyC as far as the pull requests go. Let me just quickly check if there are any issues that have been marked as need discussions during sync. Okay, no new issues. So I'm gonna quickly pop over to some of the other repos to see if we if there's anything new on either like the website or other things. I know we have a new repo, Pony Senver, that has just recently been added. Thank you to BTAB for helping us bring that in. It's quite nice. Apparently there's a new pull request on the Pony Senver repo for switching to makefile. So it looks like he's just replacing the previous shell script that he was using for building and testing Pony Senver with something more consistent with the other repos.
Yep. It looks good to me.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he did mention that the dock's target is broken, so I'll just quickly check if there's an issue for that. Otherwise, I'll just create an issue quickly for fixing the dock's target. Okay, issue open. Do we currently have CI set up for this repo? I don't think we do.
Where are we doing CI now? Did we stop using Circle CI? Or do we still use it for some of the other repos?
I believe we still use it for some of the other repos. Let me check Pony up.
I'm going to close the add make file issue.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
It looks like PonyUp might be using GitHub Actions.
Yeah, it looks like it's all GitHub Actions now. I feel like I should have known that, but Sean has mostly been doing all the CI changes, and I've just been saying, yeah, it looks good, and occasionally fixing shell scripts.
Yeah, I haven't... I haven't touched GitHub Actions really at all yet, since the beta, when it was like early beta and not very stable, so I'm
sure that's good enough. So if there is no issue open for that, I'll open up an issue for adding. Oh, wait, no, there is an issue for that. Great. Yeah, so at some point, it would be nice to get CI working for PonySemver, but yeah. Okay.
So if we're waiting for, to do the RFCs, waiting for Matthias to join, we could talk a little bit. I don't know. Are we out of pull requests and issues here?
Pretty much, as far as I can tell. So I'm happy to open it up to if anyone has anything we'd like to discuss before Matthias gets here.
I mean, if we're filling time, one point that I did see somebody brought up, I believe that Epic Eric. Cross-posted something from Reddit, perhaps, and there's a question in the Pony Mailing Reddit called "Why does Hat exist?"
Oh yes, I remember seeing this. I remember not responding because I was just like, I don't think I have a good answer to this because I know for a fact, it's really just a matter. At least my understanding is that it's just a matter of it doesn't have to exist. It would just require some other changes in how the compiler interprets what the capabilities mean, right?
Yeah. I raised this point before because when I was working through in the Mare compiler, the working through implementing the type system, I kind of got to this point and I was like, wait, things would be simpler if we removed it and said that return values have the semantic of returning something that's ephemeral by default. And if you want it to not be ephemeral, you have to explicitly say that instead.
Yeah.
Because I think that's really the most common case. And it makes things a little bit, it makes things a little more consistent in some ways. Although maybe the original implementers of the system would say that it's less consistent in other ways. But I don't know, I believe it's more consistent on the whole and also less for people to understand and remember. Because then you only have to remember about aliases and not about like explicitly marking something as ephemeral.
Yeah. I largely agree. Of course, having not considered the consequences too much, but I think this is definitely the sort of thing that would be worthwhile of a discussion over an RFC for making the reference capabilities ephemeral by default on return types. I think that would be an interesting RFC to talk about.
Yeah, because return types are the only place where it makes sense to have something marked as ephemeral.
I don't think I've ever used an ephemeral capability on anything other than a return value. Return type.
I don't think it would even be valid. I don't think the compiler would see it as valid because the other places you use types are like parameters and locals, and then also just like referencing types to use their constructors. Obviously it doesn't make sense to when you're referencing a type to call a method on it as a constructor, like it doesn't make sense to have it be ephemeral there because you're not even calling it on an instance, you're calling it on the type. For parameters and locals, those can never be ephemeral. By definition, they do exist as like a bound name in that place. So they have that binding. And so return values are the only place I believe that it's legal to specify ephemeral. And you know, in that case, like it doesn't make sense to say that the return value is not ephemeral unless you are like aliasing, say, a field, right? That's going to stick around beyond the length of the method. And if you're referencing a field, you're already forced to alias at the site where you reference it. So you're already kind of invoking an alias. I don't see the point of hat, much like the OP and Reddit. And I think it is something that we should maybe seek to remove unless somebody has a great reason to keep it around.
Yeah, actually, there is one place I recall it coming up. I'm not entirely sure if it's necessary or how big of a problem this is. The only place I've seen this other than return types is when, like, for example, in collections list node. Let me see what method this is in. It's sort of like right at the top of the file in the Pony standard library. So like packages, collections, list node.pony. Line 83, you're pretty much doing a replacement of a field and then saying, you know, as a hat. And returning a hat.
Oh, with as, okay.
Yeah, so using it with as. I'm not sure, I don't recall if that's actually necessary, but I assume it is. I think it is. Or if that was made unnecessary at some point. I don't really remember.
Yeah, I wonder. Let's try compiling that. Let's see. I wouldn't be surprised if it was. Well, yeah. So this is a case where you're asserting but you can't. So the interesting thing here is that as is about asserting at runtime that the type descriptor matches. Right, so you're saying that like at runtime, I'm going to reach into the type descriptor of this pointer and see if it matches the type descriptor that I have for type A. And if it does not, I'm going to raise an error. And if it does, then I'll continue by returning that. So strictly speaking, as shouldn't even be interacting with capabilities in my humble opinion, right? Because as is about asserting, I mean,
yeah.
In theory, you could use as to like downgrade a capability, you know, ahead of time before assigning it. But you shouldn't really be doing that. You should be just setting it as what it needs to be on the left hand side, which usually be, you know, left hand side of an assignment. But in this case, the left hand side is the return type of the method. So, I think that. If it is, if removing the hat from that as line does break, you know, it does make a compiler error, I believe that that compiler error should not be there because I think that as shouldn't interact with capabilities. But it does in other places, right? We have like as above that on line 676, we have like as this, you know, arrow A, which again is another case where. Yeah, it's interesting. But I think that if we remove hat from the return value, we would also remove it from these as that are assigning to the return value.
Yes, I would agree. Yeah, this doesn't seem to be something that would prevent the effectiveness of, you know, this theoretical RFC from going forward, I think.
Yeah. So thank you, u/ineffective topos on Reddit, for raising this point of discussion. If you hear this, the short answer is that I agree that it doesn't need to exist.
Yeah, I think, since I have a Reddit account and I believe you don't, I think I'll make a note after the sync meeting to just quickly pop onto Reddit and say, you know, hey, we discussed it. In the sync meeting and like put a link to the sync meeting in case, you know, cause I assume he may not have he may not have an account on Zulip.
Right.
So, you know, I'll say, you know, we talked about on Zulip, if you don't have Zulip, you know, we talked about in the sync meeting, here's a link to the sync meeting, just so he knows that there's some, there's been some discussion. We didn't just ignore it.
Yep. Yeah. So, and if this person never reads the Zulip, I'll also just mention here that, like I said, this is the way I implemented it in the Mayor compiler because I was running through the type system implementing it and I did not see a reason to have this be part of it. So it does seem to, in the limited testing that I've done so far with the Mayor compiler, it does seem to bear out as feasible to remove.
Yeah. I definitely would believe it.
Of course, yeah, but like I said, it's been limited testing and I haven't done any sort of like formal verification or anything on the adjustments I've made. It's been largely sort of cobbling together stuff from George Steed's paper, as well as Paul Lyotard's paper, as well as like the original Pony type system and trying to cobble it together into like incorporating the improvements from those papers. And also this like small change as well. It's interesting because in George Steed's paper, hat still exists as part of the type system. And I guess I'll say that, yeah, in the Mayor compiler, it does too, but it's never the type of, it's never something that you type in the program. It's just the type something has while it's in flight in between, you know, from one place to another. And it's never a type that you specify as a return value. So there's not really a syntax for it as much as I'll clarify that. But the hat is still, it still seems to be necessary as part of the type system, but not part of the syntax or like ceremony that the user, the code developer is involved with, other than in error messages.
Yeah.
And in error messages, we might, at that point, we might be served by, you know, using like the word ephemeral, just to make it clear. And I think, yeah, the error messages I've been using in the Mirror compiler, they say things like, you know, you need to consume this, that sort of thing, like letting you know that you need to make it ephemeral when it is not.
Yeah, giving a bit of help to say, you know, this might be the problem. Here's how you might be able to solve that. Right. Seems like a nice thing to do. I think the Pony compiler, it's certainly improved, but I don't think it has the best error messages I've seen.
Yeah, it's tricky because a lot of the type checking in the current Pony compiler, a lot of the type checking logic is like, it's so deep down in the call stack that you end up losing you lose context on the code that would be best for detecting that, like a small change that you could make might fix the issue, is far away from in terms of context and call stack, it's far away from the area where you might actually report that to the user. And it's also hard in the current type checking of the Pony compiler to test like hypothetical cases. In the Mirror compiler, you know, in order to check if something is like, you know, if you consume this, it would fix the issue, like that sort of hint. In the Mirror compiler, I sort of like experimentally or hypothetically introduce the consume and then do the type checking on that tree again with that like change bit, and confirm that it actually would work before showing that hint. But in the Pony compiler, like the types get sort of like incorporated into the state of the syntax tree. And it's not easy to sort of hypothetically test a slightly different typing scenario than the one that's there, like sort of for that like detail of architecture of how that state is tracked.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I see Matthias is here. Welcome, Matthias.
Hi. I made it. Yay.
So I think it's a good time to transition over to RFCs and start talking about some of those.
Sure thing.
So I think first things first, quickly, I think if we want to move forward with the syntax change to behavior calls, I don't know if we want to discuss that today or push it off until we possibly have more people here. But I think as far as I'm aware, based on the discussion from the last sync meeting, I think this would be ready to move into final comment period.
Oh yeah, I thought we were going to vote on it today to merge it in. So yeah, I would say definitely final comment. If not, I mean, based on the conversation we had last week, it looks like you made the changes that we talked about. And so, I'd be ready for either voting it in or just final comment is, of course, fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ready for a vote. It's just a matter of, I don't know, what is generally the required number of core team members for a vote? I know it varies depending on, you know, general opinion.
But it hasn't been something that we've made a formal rule about.
I think usually it's been like, you know, at least three.
Yeah.
And I think we have three.
If somebody has like outstanding concerns, then, you know, just like out of respect or whatever, we wait for those to try to get resolved first to some degree. But I believe that, for example, Sean, you know, who had some comments in the last week, in last week's call, I think those were addressed by the changes that you made to RFC. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything. What am I trying to say? All of the concerns that have been raised have been addressed by the changes that I've made, as well as just in general reducing the scope of the RFC to just being a syntactic change and, you know, moving other things into future RFCs.
Yeah, so I'd be good to vote it in today if those on the call today agree that it should go in.
Yep. Matthias, do you agree with this? Are you familiar enough with this RFC?
It was a long time I first read it. I just refreshed my memories, and it seems good.
Okay, great.
I especially like the dollar. It's all PHP.
It's a commonly used symbol that we are not using, and
We need to get it in.
Yeah, you gotta get it in.
Yeah. I would have, like, if I was more would have been more involved, I would have suggested like a spaceship operator with multiple, made of multiple symbols. But I think it's good as it is.
Yeah, I think so. And Ryan, do you have any concerns about this RFC as it currently stands?
No objections. No.
Okay, great. So I think we can move forward and accept the RFC then, considering that.
Sounds good.
All right. So I will. Oh man, it's been so long. Of all people, I should know how to actually, like, what the process is, because I know the process for what to do after the RFC is accepted. I guess it just gets merged, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, drop a comment and then.
Cool.
We need to, like.
There's the whole rigmarole that I have to go through to, you know, get all the issues and stuff synced up, but that's fine. I'll do that after the meeting.
And give it a number and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
While he's typing that up, we can jump over. I'll jump us over to the. Can we talk a little bit about the hashable stuff, Matthias?
With pleasure. Yes.
Yeah. So sorry. It's been kind of a tag on this in Zulip. I've not been super responsive on that platform recently.
No worries.
I believe I understand, like, the issues that you have communicated so far. What I'm trying to understand is if there's a workaround. And so what I actually just posted in the Zulip right before this call was, so what I was picturing with this was, so I guess just to give context to everyone else, right, the one of the hangups here on RFC number... this is pull request in RFC's repo, pull request number 157. One of the hangups here is about trying to figure out what to do about the hash of the real type. And Vinus is trying to avoid introducing a performance penalty on real.hash. You know, from this RFC, while still maintaining the invariant that calling real.hash would be the same as calling hashing.finish parentheses the real number dot hash with parentheses hashing.begin.
Yes. So this would be the new hashing hashing shenanigans, hashing boilerplate you would need to do to be able to basically build like composite hashes of, for example, like the standard example is a custom class person with name and birth date, for example, to combine hashes of both name and birth date into one hash to make this class hashable. Yeah. And if stuff should have a hash function, like it used before, but for composite hashing, it should have a hash width. And this hash width stuff, to make it basically consistent above across all possible things it could hash, I chose the zip hash algorithm, which is currently used for strings and arrays in Pony. And hashing a real number, let's say U size or U64. Previously did some XOR bit shift magic, some common hashing, operation. I don't know if there's an algorithm behind an actual one. But it's really efficient. So I benched it on my machine. It was like 5 nanoseconds opposed to the new zip hash stuff it was on the U64 on my machine. It was 12 nanoseconds. So we have a little bit more than twice as slow as this one. So this is the numbers we are speaking of. I don't know if this is acceptable.
What I'm trying to understand is if there's a way to have our cake and eat it too here, and I'm just trying to follow this until the dead end, if there is a dead end. So what I was thinking was, okay, keeping real dot hash the way it is with the current implementation, not changing it, so it would have the same result it currently has and same performance, obviously. And then introducing hash width with the hash state, which is like implemented in a special way so that it arrives at the same answer as real dot hash, but you know, not as efficiently, but at least it's the same answer. And yeah, that would probably mean a special case of like either ignoring part of the hash state or, you know, using it in some way that would, trying to manipulate the hash state in a way that is going to arrive at the same answer. It's kind of like a special case that is implemented there just to make it match the current hash answer, but without introducing the performance detriment to the real dot hash with no arguments.
Yeah. Tricky. I think this is tricky to go into the innards of zip hash. What I thought maybe we can in this as part of this RFC skip the actual hash function completely and only keep hash width. So everything that wants to hash something needs to go create a hash state, feed it to hash width, and then finish this hash state. So it's on the side of a hash set or hash map to actually do all the shenanigans. So we don't need to keep consistency between those two functions. And so this would then mean we would still need to live with this performance penalty.
Yeah, if we got rid of the dot hash function, then yeah, I think it would be a performance penalty for this and also possibly for some other cases.
I don't know. I think so the places where the hashing is, I'm not sure. I don't think we use the hash for anything else than the collections. So there's a string constant pool, I think, in Pony that uses zip hash for storing them, but I think this wouldn't interfere here. It's not so. But yeah, I think it's hard to close to impossible to fiddle with the hash state so that the result will be the same as XORing. I mean, the hash, normal hash, operates on a U size, and the state of the zip hash is four U size, a quadruple of U size, so four U sizes in a tuple. Maybe we can just do it on one of them, like do the XOR shenanigans on one of them. It would result like the hash we obtained for real will then change, but it will be consistent and fast. Right? This is the cake. Eaten and kept
eating and having, yeah. So if I understood correctly, you have an idea for something that would change the current calculation. So, like, you know, after merging the change, yield.hash would be, the values would be different than they were before, but they would be comparable in efficiency. And they would become consistent from hash to hash width?
Yes, it would. So the only thing that I don't know, so zip hash has a good distribution. So this is what you want from a hash function, amongst other stuff. So I think, so if we fiddle with this internal state and just mingle just a small part of it, then I am... close. I would need to check how this hash then behaves. So what the distribution is. It might not be too good. I don't know. I never tested a hash function in a meaningful way. Like testing its distribution. No, this is the danger here.
I'm looking at the finish function, which I'm not sure what half sip hash 24.sipround32 is doing, but at the end it's XORing the four pieces of state together, right?
Yes.
And so, in theory, this is, something that, like you said, we need to be confirmed. But yeah, in theory, if we had, three of these values were like some static, let's say we haven't hashed anything else into the hash state. We only hashed real. Then you might end up with like three pieces of this state are like zero or FF or whatever kind of like default state that they are. And then the one that you, are these all U size sized?
Yes. 32 sized. I think you're looking at the wrong thing. Let me just quickly.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was looking at sip hash 24 streaming.
Sorry. I updated the stuff. I updated the stuff in my own fork. I didn't push it. I need to push it. I am. My bad.
Year four, but maybe an old commit.
Let me. Yeah, here we are. I'm sorry for the delay. Built-in and one. Yeah, this one. So I'm pasting it into it, into the Zoom chat and into Zulip. Here we are. So here we have an update function in line 40, and the finish function is actually in line 166. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we're still looking at U32 size data. I see. I was ignoring the ifdef. But yes, they're U sized. Okay. Because the ifdef, the first clause is U32, and so the clause is U64. So okay, yeah. So imagine that we had this hash take that we initialized. We hashed one thing into it, which was the the size of a, sorry, we hashed real into it and nothing else so far.
Yeah.
And real only affected one of these four state variables. And then at the end, it seems they're all just getting XORed together. So I believe that if the other three variables are sort of, static, and there's one variable that changes, then the distribution of the results would be, as good as the distribution of the one part that we were changing. And I could be wrong. I haven't looked at the implementation of SIP round.
Yeah, it's doing also, it's rotating and XORing and adding and rotating and doing stuff.
Yeah, so I guess it remains to be figured out whether this would actually have the same distribution or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I would go from my point of view, I would go with the performance penalty, but I'm like a 99% sure that, for example, Sean is the more performance savvy here, and I think he wouldn't accept. I'm going to paste it, put it into Zulip, and see how he reacts. I will suggest this. I will suggest also add it to the RFC. To keep an efficient real hashing function. And I'm going
to... If we can't have both, I'd be tempted to say we should keep the performance and lose the consistency, which I don't really want to do, but yeah.
Or possibly if we're more willing to go down that path, we might be willing to instead look towards something like a slightly different algorithm, such as like XOR Shiro 256 **, or something like that. If we're under the consideration of wanting to perhaps prefer better performance over slightly degraded statistical properties.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the statistical properties also become performance of the application too, right?
Yes, especially with hash tables, like having a good distribution, especially in the low bits, which is often a problem with some of these hash functions. That can make a large difference.
Yeah, there's also a question of like where these numbers are coming from. Distribution over like, so let's say we're just talking about hashing of a U size. Distribution over the entire, a really naive hash function could just be
identity,
the U size that you got. And that would have perfect distribution if measured across the entire range of possible U size values. But if somebody's application is just using, if somebody's application is just using a certain range, let's say numbers like 1 through 50 or something, then that's obviously a really bad distribution for those numbers. So,
I think distribution is not the only key to a good performance.
I'm sort of tempted to say it's not super important that real.hash is equivalent to real.hash width if it's documented, because you'd expect that anything that is going to be relying on the hashing is going to either use one or the other, and not necessarily expect. So let's say you had like a person class and the person has an age and you're hashing on the age. And you don't have any other fields yet because I don't even have implemented anything else. Would you expect that person class to have the same hash as if you hashed, if you called the person.hash with the hash state and, the age.hash directly, would you expect them to have the same hash? I mean, I wouldn't necessarily. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but I wouldn't expect them to have the same. And so it may not be super relevant this would imply we're keeping both methods around, and I think that both of my suggestions kind of imply that we don't. I don't see the push to get rid of the .hash method. If the default implementation of it is just like calling hash width, and then on real.hash we have this optimization where it's maybe even inconsistent, although I prefer consistency, but even if it's inconsistent, I don't think that'll be a huge issue as long as it's documented.
So we're
not going to mix both in the same thing, like in the same hash table, for example. It's not going to mix using dot hash in some places and dot hash with in others.
I would not expect to mix hashes from things of a different domain. Like a U-size is a different thing than a person with a field, with a U-size field. That's the only thing you hash. So I think it might be a problem if you misuse the hash for something else, But I think we're on the safe side here. But I would still take the performance penalty. But let's agree to disagree and maybe move on.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't want to. I'm happy to discuss, and I could continue like for hours. But.
Are there other RFCs you want to discuss in the next few minutes? Sorry.
Theo, do you have any agenda on what's the next thing to?
No, I don't. I just want to quickly mention that I will be merging the behavior call syntax RFC, just because, it's convenient since I haven't done anything about it yet. Because Sean has mentioned on the Zulip that Sylvan may have some issues with it. So there will be further discussion on this.
Okay.
Other than that, I have no agenda for what RFCs should be talked about next.
Can we place your RFC in the final comment period at least and give Sylvan a deadline?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Sean talked to Sylvan about it, and I'm sure, if Sylvan can't speak himself, Sean will raise his concerns. But I'll put it into final comment period.
So we are formally out of time, but if there's more we want to talk about, we can. at least I'm available to.
So we have, I don't know what's the status, we have two RFCs that are in final comment period since a long time. It is pull request 155 and 147. Maybe we should quickly check their state and see if we should act on them. So I'm looking at 147 added range redesign RFC by Showbeats. I met him at the Berlin, one of the two Berlin, he was at both Berlin Pony user groups. And he suggested a range redesign for forward and backward iteration. And I think there were some concerns being raised.
I think that's true of both of these RFCs. It looks like they were discussed in sync. Yes. Concerns were raised and they have not been addressed by the RFC author yet.
Okay. Should we... I think, yeah. Is there, like, how can we... I think keeping them in final comment period is like...
Let's remove final comment period. I can do that.
Okay.
I'm going to say just removing from final comment period until the above comments are addressed.
And it's for both of them, right?
Yeah, the other one had a much smaller change. So 147 was a little more fundamental and with the feedback. Yeah. 155 was a rather small change, and we're just talking about dash rather than underscore here. So if some time passes and the RFC author doesn't come back, we could try to have somebody else take over ownership of this if that seems easier. This one's much more close to being. There's nothing else. Is there any, Matthias, is there anything else you want to discuss about any of your recent RFCs?
We don't need to. Just look at them if you have time. So the IP address I need to still work on. I didn't address some comments. The en route. I think I addressed those comments. Maybe we can put it in final comment period. It's 159.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I say let's mark it as final comment period.
Yeah, so we can at the next sync maybe rejected. I'm at a point where I'm also fine with having it rejected. And then there's the new RFC for adding the maybe library. I was asked by Sean to edit. I kind of feel guilty. There's so much stuff being merged into Pony or the PonyLang org by me. When I wrote down some examples, usage examples, it felt like there's not much one. It's just a new syntax, so a new kind of API. But I don't, yeah. And it occurred to me that we need generic type inference. Okay.
Yeah, generic type inference. That's a thing.
Do you have it in MEA? Do you have it?
I do not at this time.
It's fine.
My hope is to not do it as generic type inference, but do it as, well, generic type inference may be still needed for the things that you're having in mind. What I'm more interested in is sort of like the automatic specialization stuff, where it would need to be, it would not need to be specified as generic at either the call site or the definition site of the function, but the function could be implicitly specialized by the compiler for performance reasons, like just basically just affecting performance and removing virtual table calls, because virtual table calls are kind of it's one of those things where one of those few areas where Pony guides you down a path that is detrimental to you a lot of times in the hot path.
Yeah.
And so you actually have to go back and do things not the easy way, but the harder way in order to get the raw performance of direct calls rather than virtual table calls. And so it's sort of just like on my, I have a target to try to make that, make the compiler be able to do the right thing without making you do extra work. But that doesn't necessarily cover every case of, where you might want generic type inference. That's just like the main case that's always on my mind. That said, Mare does have more inference than Pony C compiler does. To the degree that it may actually be controversial in some cases, where some might argue that inference is not wanted. But I think it would not be that difficult to add generic type inference to the MEA compiler. It just has not been high on my list because I'm more interested in that automatic specialization thing. So as I mentioned, kind of when you were joining the call, Matthias, it's a little bit easier in the architecture of the MEA compiler to sort of test out to try something and see if it types out correctly, and if not, try something else. Versus in the Pony C compiler, it's kind of architected as such, like, oh, this is the type, and you have to kind of, either it works or it doesn't, and there's not really much in the way of, like, hypotheticals or branching. Now, I believe that the work they're doing in Verona is probably much more robust in terms of, I think Paul's been doing some more robust inference that goes even further than I went in the MEA compiler, so there's that.
Yeah, there's a pretty interesting constraint solving situation going on in Verona, because there's also a lot more complexity, because there has to be some sort of, like, I don't want to call it flow typing because I'm not sure if it actually falls under flow typing, but there's a lot of stuff that has to go on with like region inference. There's a necessity for pretty serious constraint solving system.
Yeah, so I'll say, yeah, the MEA compiler doesn't go that far, at least not at this time, but it does go a lot farther than the current policy does in terms of being able to support inference. And like I said, it can be a matter of discussion for whoever wants to participate in that discussion, or like how much inference it should be, or like what's too much inference. For example, I like being able to infer things like parameter types and in cases where you're passing those parameters to another function, you could say they're just constrained to be the same as the function you're passing to, which makes delegation really succinct, but some people just don't like that. So, yeah. Anyway, 10 minutes over. Anything else before we cut out?
No, I think that's all.
Well, thanks everyone who joined us and everyone who listened along at home.